The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hope you're having a great day, great weekend. Hope it was a wonderful week for you. We just have one more week until 4th of July. That's right, it's coming up. Our country's birthday coming up in just a week. But this week, we get to celebrate, you know, the first weekend in summer. That's right. On Monday, we saw that strawberry moon that popped up. It was pretty beautiful, actually. Nice and huge moon that we saw out there. Enjoyed the day. It was a pretty warm week, and we are looking forward to a great week ahead. So I hope you have lots of great plans for this weekend. I hope you had a nice Saturday, and I hope you have nice plans for the Sunday as well. I'm here each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m., providing financial advice in a language you can understand right here from the treetop studios of North Shore 104.9 as we overlook the North Beverly train station. It doesn't look like that many people are awake this morning. Hopefully, you're enjoying your time at the house, getting the plants watered, sitting out in your front porch, reading a book, perhaps reading the Sunday Globe. Whatever it is that you're doing, I hope you're enjoying yourself. And perhaps you've just been tuning in to find out what pearls of wisdom Mark might have to share today. Well, I've got a few good ones today, and I hope you're really looking forward to the show as I am. There has been a lot of social media press about a TV show that appeared about a week and a half ago. If you ever watched the John Oliver show on HBO, John Oliver does this 20-minute segment. It's called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. Well, John shares some perspectives on some of the new rulings that have come out of the Department of Labor as it relates to 401k plans. It's, you know, this is an issue, frankly, that our industry, my industry internally, has been talking about for more than a decade. But just recently, the Department of Labor exposed, which we've always been waiting for, a lot of the issues that go on within 401k plans about overcharging of fees, who benefits from this and from that. And it's finally out there. And the Department of Labor has issued a report on changes that they want to make. But honestly, when someone hears the word Department of Labor, you basically tune out. What are you going to learn from it? What do you want to hear from it? So John Oliver put some of the rulings that came out of the Department of Labor report to life. And he actually had some staffers work on it and put together a presentation that has many people in the mutual fund industry, in the financial services industry, financial advisors, brokers, insurance salesmen, absolutely scrambling because suddenly they have been exposed. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, so tune in for that. A couple other things. I have a good friend of mine who is a financial advisor, lives down in Coral Gables, Florida. His name is Harold Avensky. He is also the dean of the financial planning program at Texas Tech University. And Harold has written and authored some of the most seminal books in our financial planning industry on understanding how wealth management works, how investment strategies work, but he finally has rolled out a book for the public, and it's called Hello, Harold. And what it basically is it's stories from clients that have called him on questions, perceptions, wives' tales that they've thought about as they've considered investing with his firm, and how he's addressed those questions with answers that put a different perspective and a different kind of spin on the question that's being asked so that you can better understand it. I'm going to share some of those with you today. I was hoping to have Harold here on the radio with us, but he is busy. He is traveling now. School is out, and so he and his wife, Dina, are traveling. So he wasn't able to join us today. A couple other things that I have to share with you. We've got this white paper it isn't really white. It's red and black and white. But it's some people call it an infographic instead. Maybe that's the best way to call it, that we had put together years ago. It's called Important Financial Lifetime Milestones. You know, we've got some milestones that are going on in our house. My daughter is graduating high school. She actually has already. She'll be going to University of Rhode Island in September. My daughter, Mindy, has her first paid internship. She's working for MFS Mutual Funds in Boston. My son, Jerry, at age 16, he got his 16 and a half, got his license this past week. So lots of great milestones and things that are happening in our lives. But I know there's great milestones that happen in yours. But did you know that there are a series of financial milestones that happen as well? One that I've talked about with you in weeks past, as you all know, that I turned 50 years old. And one of those milestones is you get blessed with that special piece of mail that comes from the American Association of Real Possibilities, not retired persons anymore, it is Real Possibilities, that they send that to you, and yes, you are entered into old age, I guess, or maturity, 50 years old, whatever you want to call it. I don't feel old. Well, that's not true. Some days I do. Some days I feel older than I did the day before, but we're all looking positive. It's a great day. It's a great day today. I'm not going to complain. Everything's a good day. All right. Couple other things to share with you. Markets, what have they been doing? Markets have been a little volatile as of late. When I say volatile, volatile means that they go up one day and go down the next. Volatile doesn't have to mean that they went up 20% or down 20%. But understand this. Markets don't move in one direction. If they did, you wouldn't need help. All you'd do is you'd buy something, forget about it, and go to sleep. And 20 years later, you'd know exactly what you have. All markets did was move in one direction. Now, frankly, if you were to take a snapshot in time between now and 20 years from now, I will bet you that had you just left things alone, you would have done just fine. But our own personal intuition, our own personal emotions steer us in directions to want to make change. We, as much as we say we don't like making change, like changes, replacing a bedroom set or moving out of our house, that we say we don't like change, we don't like to get rid of the checkbook or whatever it might be, when it comes to investing, people seem to like change. It's one of the weird things. If we actually changed less when it comes to investing, we would probably do a lot better. We're going to talk about that as well today. All right, let's jump into it. I want you to look back and think over the past 84 years. Every year, we measure ourselves, we measure investment performance to the S&P 500. Why people choose the S&P 500, I don't know why. But people say, well, how am I doing as compared to the S&P 500? First and foremost, let me ask you this question. What's the S&P 500 trading at right now? Chances are you don't know. 98%, 99% of people probably don't know. But if I asked you, what's the Dow trading at right now within the closest 1,000 points, I bet you have a pretty good answer. It's around 17,000 and change. It's a little higher than 17,000. It's gone as high as 18. It's gone down, but around 17,000, right? But the S&P 500, the measuring stick that everybody wants to compare their portfolio to, you say, how am I doing as compared to the S&P 500? You don't know what the S&P 500 is trading at. Isn't that kind of odd? Interesting. No one ever asks, well, how would I compare against the Dow Jones Industrial Average? Do you know why you don't want to compare yourself against the Dow? Well, did you know that the Dow Jones Industrial Average is made up of 30 stocks? No, it's not much more than that. It is 30 stocks. It's the 30 stocks that represent the titans in each of the various industries and sectors in our industry. That's the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You won't find Coke and Pepsi in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You'll find Coke. You won't find Microsoft and Dell both in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You'll find Microsoft. You're going to find the titans of industry in each of those categories, in that group. So then you look to the S&P 500. The S&P 500, I'm looking out the window, and the meter maid is out. She's ready to ticket people. That's what this woman does. I see her every Sunday. She comes out. She's got this little thing attached to her waist, and she's going to start flashing people's cars. I hope you guys paid your parking and did what you had to do at the North Beverly train station, or she's about ready to write some tickets. Never mind. I get a little distracted. I'm sorry. I'm trying to watch what's going on. I was talking about the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is made up of the 500 largest investments that trade on the exchanges. And that's made up, they determine that by what's called market capitalization. Now, do you know what market capitalization means? Imagine this. You can go right now and find out how many shares of stock are trading right now, out available for trading for, let's say, Google. And let's say there's 600 million shares available of Google stock. You might own 10 of them, but there's 600 million that are out there trading. If you were to take that 600 million, and I'm just grabbing at a number here, I could be totally off on the number of shares. You take that number of shares and multiply it times the price per share, and that's readily available, you get a big number. It's probably in the several billion dollar figure. You're going to get an understanding of what Google is valued at from a market cap standpoint. That's its market capitalization. You can do that with any stock that's out there. You've heard the term large cap, mid cap, small cap. What does that really mean? It means what is the value if you were to multiply all of the outstanding shares of that company, multiply all of them against the price that it closed at today, what is that value? So generally, if your company that you're with has a market cap that's, say, greater than $10 billion, I like to think $100 billion, but let's say it's $10 billion. $10 billion and more, you're generally considered a large cap company. $10 billion. Now, 2 to $10 billion, you're considered a mid cap company. Under $2 billion, you're considered a small cap company. So let's be sure we understand this correctly. If this is based upon a stock, okay, any stock that you pick, and you could go right now, go to Yahoo Finance, go to Google Finance, take a look at any stock that you own. Look at Buffalo Wild Wings and look at Pepsi. I don't care what you look at. It's going to tell you the market cap. It says the median the market cap of the investment. What that number is if you were to take a look at that, what that market cap is, maybe it says $2 billion. You divide the current share price by the median market cap, you're going to know how many shares are outstanding floating around this country of people that have shares of that stock. You might own 100 of them, but if you find out that there's 25 million, you realize how insignificant your ownership in the company might be. And it's really important that you understand what median market cap is. The S&P 500 represents the 500 largest by market cap. So generally, you're going to have, there's at least 500 stocks that trade on the exchanges that have a market cap greater than $10 billion. I mean, you can name some of them. But this is where you're going to find both Coke and Pepsi. You're going to find Bank of America and Wells Fargo. You're going to find Microsoft and Google. You're going to find Amazon and Netflix. You're going to find all of those companies in that group. So you might say, well, why not compare my investment portfolio to the S&P 500, the 500 largest investments that trade? Well, my guess is that your portfolio doesn't resemble anything that looks like what the S&P 500 is. And so trying to compare your portfolio to the performance of the S&P 500 is a very, very, very flawed approach. If you want to know how to figure out what you should be comparing it against, good. Because I want to tell you, but not now, when we get back. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. This is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108, or on the web at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. NewMeadows.com.
New Meadows Golf Club in Topsfield is the North Shore's premier nine-hole public golf course. Golfers of all skill levels find the unique course design challenging and pristine conditions amazing. The meticulous grounds at New Meadows are the best around. Join a golf league or start your own. For golfers age 17 and under, receive a 50% discount on greens fee. To book a tee time, call New Meadows at 978-887-9307. That's 978-887-9307. Online, newmeadowsgolf.com.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Earlier in the show, we were talking about understanding the overall portfolio structure that you own of your investments and whether it's appropriate to compare it to the S&P 500. It's an important distinction to know what the S&P 500 represents and what your portfolio represents. Chances are your portfolio is far different from the S&P 500, yet why do we try to compare ourselves to it? You know, there are years in which the S&P 500 was up 30, 40%. There's also years when the S&P 500 was down 30 and 40%. By the way, the S&P 500 has never been down 100%. It's never even been down 90%. So when people talk about, oh my God, if I put my money in the stock market, I could lose all of my money. Well, certainly if you invest your money appropriately in a collection of securities, and the S&P 500 just being one of those, the chances of you losing all of your money is virtually zero. And the longer you stay invested, the greater the chance of you ending up with a positive average rate of return. So let's talk about this for a minute. I want you to look at what you say you own in your portfolio. Let's grab your 401k, for instance. Many people, more than 50% of Americans, in their 401k, they own a fund that's called a lifestyle fund. It's oftentimes the typical first purchase that people make. They say, oh, I'll buy the lifestyle fund. It's based upon my age. You know, it says retirement date 2026. So you might buy the lifestyle portfolio 2026. So that's 10 years from now, right? Your lifestyle portfolio consists of probably 10 or more individual mutual funds in the portfolio. And they certainly represent more than 10 or more asset classes. Now, when I talk about asset classes, I talk about large cap, mid cap, small cap, growth, value, bonds, high quality, low quality, international. They're all over the place. In a lifestyle fund, you own a little of all of those things. Yet why would you try to compare the performance of your lifestyle fund to the S&P 500 when it's very possible that maybe only 30% of your portfolio is held in S&P 500 investments? But people don't get that. People say, well, I'm just trying to beat the market. I'm just trying to beat the market. Well, if you're trying to beat the market, the way to beat the market, and it's not easy, is to invest in items that are far more aggressive than the S&P 500, not less aggressive than the S&P 500. Remember, in a lifestyle portfolio, you might own S&P 500 investments, but you'll also own small cap and mid cap. Those are more aggressive. You may also own cash, far less aggressive. You may own treasuries, less aggressive. You may own gold or real estate or other types of bonds or income-producing investments, and those can be variable. They could be more or less aggressive, depending upon the situation. Do you think you can figure that out on your own? No, some people say, well, I'm going to buy a lifestyle portfolio and let somebody else figure it out for me. But if you expect your, if your expectations are to design the portfolio to beat the S&P 500, you're sorely mistaken. People say, well, the stock market averages, Mark, around 10% a year on a 20-year, 30-year basis. This is true. But when we say the stock market, we're talking about the S&P 500 only. We're also talking about the S&P 500 where nobody is adding money and nobody is taking money out. I want you to imagine a period of time in your life where you think you will be able to hold an investment strategy for 20 or 30 years and never take a nickel out and never add a dollar. It's not likely to happen. Most of these index performance numbers that we see are index numbers that are based in a vacuum. It means nothing goes in, nothing goes out. It's just held within that container. And so one of the things that I'd encourage you to ask your financial advisor or ask of yourself if you're doing this on your own is when you're comparing the performance of your investment account to, let's say, the S&P 500 or any other index that you choose, is the index reflecting the same kind of trading activity that you've done in your portfolio? What I mean by that is, let's say, for instance, you had $1,000 that you invested in your IRA. You had $1,000 to invest in your IRA. And every month following that first deposit, you added $100. So let's say you added it 12 times, actually 11 times, because you made, let's just say 12 times, it's fine. So you added it 12 times, so now you should have $2,200, right? You started with $1,000. You started with $1,000, and you should now have $2,200. What's the performance on your investment account? You started with $1,000, now it's worth $2,200. Did you just make 120%? Did you make 120% in your investment? Some people would say, well, yeah. Well, no, you didn't. Because some people will look at their statement and they say, well, I started with $1,000. I'm ending the year with $2,020. I must have made 120% on my portfolio. You didn't. In fact, you have to use a rather complicated formula called an internal rate of return calculation to figure out what your performance was. Now, let's say, for instance, now you want to compare yourself against an index, the S&P 500 index. And the S&P 500 index report says, well, if you invested $1,000 at the beginning of the year, at the end of the year, it's worth $1,050. That would mean that the S&P 500 went up 5%, right? Well, what if, so what's the performance of your investment account if you went from 1,000 to 2,200? What's the performance of your account? Some would say it's zero, that your performance was zero because all you did was add new money. But when you're looking and comparing it to an index, the index doesn't care whether you added money or not. Many financial advisory firms now have the ability to compare rather than just a stale linear average, meaning what was the S&P 500 here to there. They say, what if you added $1,000 at the beginning of the year and then added $100 to the S&P 500 through the end of the year, what would that performance return be? And you're going to get a number. And then you can get a number on your own personal performance. Those are numbers that you can compare yourself to. But most advisors don't provide that. Certainly most brokerage firms don't provide it. It's kind of interesting, to tell you the truth. And this is something we're going to talk about a little bit later. There's this discussion about the fiduciary rule. An advisor's obligation to place your interests first. Have you ever noticed that when you go to visit with your stockbroker, someone over at Smith Barney, someone over at UBS, and you have what's called a brokerage account with them, they will rarely, if ever, put any of the advice that they shared with you over the phone or in person in writing it to you. You ever notice that? It's not that they don't want to. In many cases, it's because they're not allowed. Because by putting advice in writing, now that brokerage firm is held liable. And they don't want that situation because it could be a he said, she said, and you produce, you know, these items in writing, and it would not work out well to the financial institution's favor. So putting advice in writing is frowned upon at the largest financial institutions that are out there, and you're turning to them. You're turning to them day after day, month after month, year after year, to be the resource that provides you with guidance and advice for your investments. Did you know that when you work with somebody, if you ask next time you're in the brokerage firm's office, you're with, I don't care whether it's UBS or Smith Barney or whomever it might be, ask your advisor, do I have a brokerage account or do I have an advisory account? Now, your advisor might be floored that you're asking such an intelligent question, but you've now just opened the Pandora's box that they don't want to talk about. I will tell you this. If your advisor smiles, you're going to know you have an advisory account. If they don't smile, you probably have a brokerage account because now you're going to start asking them some other questions. Because if you have the advisory account, these guys are ready to answer your question. Question number two, after, do I have a brokerage account or an advisory account? And that question number two is it your responsibility and obligation at this firm to place my interests first? If you have an advisory account, the answer is absolutely. If you have a brokerage account, the answer is absolutely not. And if the person with the brokerage account says absolutely, you better run, because they do not know the difference between what placing your interest first means versus just picking a suitable investment for you. Those are two very big distinctions, and you need to understand them. Because as we get further and further into this down the road of understanding how best to help you manage your investments, you need to know that the advisors that you're working with are putting your interest first, placing your interest first. The third thing I would ask of your financial advisor is, do you have a CFP designation, a certified financial planner designation? If you get a no on either side, ask them this. Do you have a CHFC designation, a chartered financial consultant designation? If they say no, you get one more shot to give them a chance for you to, them to remain as your financial advisor. You ask them, do you have a PFS designation, a personal financial specialist? These designations are generally handed out to people who are CPAs and accountants who also provide financial advice. So chances are your broker doesn't have that designation anyways. If the answer is no to all three, I would begin to question whether you're truly ever going to get honest and authentic financial advice on your overall financial situation. Now, here's one. The broker might say, yes, but I have my CIMA, my CIMA, a Certified Investment Management Associate. And I may be saying the last A wrong. It might be something else. But a CIMA designation is a designation provided to people that are very good at understanding how investments work. They are not trained anywhere in the field of financial planning, but they do understand quite well about investments. So if your relationship with your broker is just for investment purposes only, you don't want any financial advice. You just want them to go ahead and attempt to pick investments. That designation might be okay. Another one that you might want to look at, the CFA designation, Certified Financial Analyst, or Chartered Financial Analyst. This is a designation that is generally held by people who are portfolio managers, who spend all of their day analyzing investments, trying to put the best risk-return correlations together so that you can build a proper portfolio. Honestly, you will not find one that does that successfully in the brokerage firm world, because they have to spend half of their time meeting with clients, prospecting, filling out paperwork, doing lots of other things. The best CFAs are the people that are found who are portfolio managers and supporters or assistants or associates to portfolio managers at mutual fund companies and other financial institutions. All right, I know I gave you a big, long list of alphabet soup, and perhaps I even put you to sleep. Fortunately, this show is available on podcast. Go to NorthShore1049.com. Starting Tuesday, you'll be able to download the podcast of this show. You can also go to the iTunes store and find Dollars and Cents right there, and you can listen to all of the previous shows. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this fiduciary duty and what John Oliver has to say. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Poppins, the Disney classic, flies into Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater with a spoonful of sugar and a whole lot of magic. This irresistible musical is a fresh fountain of youth that will make many a grown-up feel like a kid again. The quintessential nanny comes to life on stage with Chim Chim Cheree, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and Step in Time. Mary Poppins is certain to captivate audiences of all ages, only at North Shore Music Theater from July 12th through the 31st. For tickets, log on to nsmt.org. Sponsored by Beverly Hospital, a member of Leahy Health.
Isn't it time to get serious about your retirement planning? Friedman Financial is a financial planning and investment management firm in Peabody. They've been helping professionals and retirees put solid strategies into play for 40 years. when you're planning to get serious about planning for retirement. Call Friedman Financial for a free initial consultation at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or go online to FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Do you need a personal, professional, or business website that fits your budget? Mead Web Design of Danvers develops and maintains websites for small and mid-sized businesses. They're a full-service web company, so you can rely on them for design, hosting, and ongoing maintenance services. Call Mead Web Design at 978-222-3722. That's 978-222-3722. Or go to meadwebdesign.com to request a quote. That's M-E-A-D webdesign.com. Mead Web Design. Websites that work.
Money, money, money. Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. We've been providing financial planning and investment advice to individuals and families who live on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the southern New Hampshire area since 1968. That's right, in April of 2018, we will be celebrating our 50th anniversary of providing financial advice to individuals and families all throughout this area. We're actually quite proud of that. I mean, if you think about the number of financial advisors that have come and gone, the financial advisory firms that have come and gone, we've been helping hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals and families find success in their overall retirement planning so that they can live life to its fullest, simplify everything within their financial life, have a trusted advisor to turn to for all of the major financial decisions that they have, and get open, honest, transparent advice, all with the insistence in our firm of placing your interests first. I continue to use the word placing your interests first because there's this great story that is circulating around the internet and will soon land, I suspect, either in your mailbox through some form of advertisement or some other form that you might see in the newspaper, whatever it might be. And it talks about this fiduciary duty. You're going to hear the word fiduciary a lot. See, doctors, lawyers, they have what's called a fiduciary obligation. It means that when you hire them, it's their obligation to place your interests first, your interests over above anybody else's. In fact, I used to argue years ago with an attorney who was representing a bank at a closing. And he brought in this family. This family was coming in to buy a house. And he was representing the bank on the firm that wanted to borrow it. And I looked at the client's financial situation. The couple was making $70,000 a year. This was in 2007. The couple was making $70,000 a year together. Yet they had just been told that they were going to have a mortgage of $400,000. And I knew that that was a mistake. I knew that that was far more than they could afford to pay. Yet the bank was willing to lend the money. And that's what the banks did back then in 06 and 07. They were lending far more than they should have been lending. And so I said to the attorney, I said, didn't you feel the slightest sense of obligation to question these young kids that perhaps taking on this mortgage, this obligation, might not be such a smart thing to do? And he says to me, Mark, despite the fact that I felt that I should have, I am a fiduciary. And the person that was paying me was the bank. And the bank was willing to take the risk. So my obligation as a fiduciary was to place the bank's interests first. The bank wanted me to do it. They believed that they took the appropriate risk protocols necessary. And I forwarded along, moved forward with the closing. So think about that from the perspective of when you are a fiduciary for somebody, it's your obligation to place the interest of that client first. So when a company comes to me, now when a client comes to me and they say, Mark, I'd like you to explore how best to invest this $100,000, this $500,000 that I have. My obligation first is to understand where everything is and what it's worth in your financial life. Not just the $100,000 or $500,000 or whatever the amount of money is that you have to invest. I want to know where everything is. I want to know the value of your house. I want to know whether there's a mortgage on it. I want to know how much money's in the bank. I want to know how much income you have, how much money you make on an annual basis. I want to review your tax return. I want to review your IRAs, your 401ks, any other investment accounts that you have, your insurance policies, your pay stubs, your benefits booklets, your estate planning documents. I want to read it all. And you might think, well, Mark, aren't you going a little too far? And my response to that is, do you want me to place your interests first? And your answer, I would think, would be, yeah, sure. Well, how can I make any type of an investment recommendation if I don't know where everything is and what it's all worth in your financial life? Now, I want you to think back to any of the relationships that you've ever had with a financial advisor, financial consultant, stockbroker, insurance salesman, whatever it is. When you mentioned the fact that you wanted to invest some money, how insistent were they on understanding where everything was and what everything was worth before they ever made an investment recommendation to you? Hopefully, you've had a good experience, but chances are that that hasn't been the case. Chances are they were, in fact, even the people that were saying, well, tell me about where the other money is. Tell me about how it all works. If you were willing to just ramble off some figures to them off the top of your head, that was good enough. I'm certainly not going to hold myself responsible for giving you financial advice and you wanting me to place your interest first by me trusting in the fact that you just simply say, well, we have some money over here. We get some money over there. We get some money there. We all want to work in this together. We all want to place your interest first. And what this new ruling that has come out of the Department of Labor that John Oliver shares on his show Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which you can download right now. Go to YouTube. Do it this morning. It's going to take you 20 minutes. It's a lengthy little performance that he does. But it explains how more individuals have been overcharged. Overcharged significantly. And without the financial institutions even feeling bad about it. You got to watch this video. But I will tell you this. If you just watch the first 10 minutes, you're going to come across thinking that John Oliver thinks that every person that offers financial advice in America is bad, that you can't trust anybody. But in the second half of his 20-minute diatribe, he is going to tell you the types of persons or people or firms you should look for. And it's frankly what we talk about here on the radio all the time. Find someone that's willing to take a fiduciary position, someone that is willing to place your interest first. And so I want to refer back to a story that I was telling earlier today about a book that my friend Harold Ovensky had written. Harold is one of the elders in the financial planning practice, but one of the most revered and admired financial advisors amongst all financial planners in America, and certainly among the public as well. Harold, I think he's the dean or the head of the Texas Tech program for financial planning. He also has an office with his wife, Dina, in Coral Gables, Florida. And Harold shares this item in his book that I am actually going to put into practice, actually started putting into practice this week. What I want to try to do is I want people to understand, here's what you can expect from us. When I say we're going to place your interest first, here's what I mean. And I'm going to offer up to you five pointers. That I would like you to write down. And when you go to visit with your financial advisor, ask them how they would answer these five questions. Because I'm going to make these statements available to every client and any person that walks in my door. Here are how we view placing your interest first works. Number one, I will always place your best interest first. Number two, I will act with prudence, with the skill, care, diligence, and good judgment of a professional. Number three, I will not mislead you, and I will provide conspicuous, full, and fair disclosures of all important facts. Number four, I will avoid conflicts of interest. Number five, I will fully disclose and fairly manage in your favor any avoidable conflicts, and I will put my signature on the bottom of that piece of paper. I would encourage you to go through those five items, and I'm going to read them again to you just so you could catch them all. It's what we're calling the fiduciary duty that we must provide to you as an advisor so you can feel comfortable that we are acting in your best interest. Number one, I will always place your best interest first.
I would ask, if you were going to visit an advisor, ask him to initial or put their signature next to every single one of these items. Number two, I will act with prudence, with the skill, care, diligence, and good judgment of a professional. Number three, I will not mislead you, and I will provide conspicuous, full, and fair disclosures of all important facts. Number four, I will avoid conflicts of interest. And number five, I will fully disclose and fairly manage in your favor any avoidable conflicts. I have this document in my office. I sign it for each person that walks in the door. I want you to be sure that your advisor is willing to sign a similar document. Now, chances are, if they're what's called a registered investment advisor, someone that is being overseen by the Securities and Exchange Commission, they are willing to sign that document without question because they know that they have an obligation to place your interests first. Now, if someone has a certified financial planner designation, they should also be willing to abide by those five items that I shared. However, there are certain circumstances where their employer will not allow them to sign such document. I'd be concerned. You should be concerned. Because the firm, your advisor might want to look out for your best interest, but your advisor might work for a larger firm, and the firm might have different policies, different guidelines on what they believe is place what they believe placing the interests of clients first means. Puzzling. It should be a lot more crystal clear. And if you watch this report that I've been talking about that appeared on the HBO show Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, if you type in Last Week Tonight with John Oliver and type in the word fiduciary, you will find this story. It is 20 minutes long. It's humorous. It's powerful. It's eye-opening. And it's real. It's very, very real. It is the secrets that have been discussed behind the curtains for so many years on how so many financial institutions are not fully disclosing in clear and open conscience what you are paying for some of the financial service programs that you receive. This is going to be a major blow to the 401k industry. Just you wait and see how much you've been paying in fees in your 401k plan. Many advisors are already working towards reducing those fees, but many have not. And frankly, the ones that have not are the ones who have employees of, say, less than 200 people. So if you work for a firm that has less than 200 people in the firm, I would really, really encourage you to take a look at how expensive your 401k is. And perhaps by watching John Oliver's story Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, you'll be able to ask and understand the right questions and know a little bit more, and maybe put the pressure on the human resources department or the trustees of your retirement plan to get a better deal. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, I've got a money-saving idea that I want to share with you. Are you a Verizon user? If you use Verizon Wireless, I got a story to tell you. We'll be right back. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
Don't have enough time to go to the gym? Grab your phone and download Bench Bro, the hottest finger-tapping fitness app.
With Bench Bro, you'll test your reflexes, your concentration, and your finger-tapping skills as Bench Bro helps you achieve your virtual dream physique.
This is a fitness resolution you can finally keep. Download our free app, Bench Bro, today.
Bench Bro.
Available on the App Store
and Google Play.
No membership required.
Do you ever wonder whether you'll have enough money to retire? Retiring for the Genius is a blueprint to prepare for a comfortable retirement. This easy-to-read guidebook on living your life in retirement is written by certified financial planner Mark Friedman and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 o'clock until 9 a.m. You'll find the tools and templates helpful so you can prepare to make smart decisions on how to spend your money in retirement. If you're older than 55 and expect to spend between $4,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement, Retiring for the Genius is a treasure map for achieving your successful retirement. When it comes to retiring, don't be a dummy. Pick up a copy of Retiring for the Genius at Amazon.com.
Pick up your treasure map for retirement. Available now at Amazon.com. Search Mark Friedman, Retiring for the Genius.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we've been providing financial planning and investment advice to individuals and families on the North Shore and the Merrimack Valley since 1968. If you want to get in touch with my office, let me give you the phone number. It's 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. If you want to drop me an email, feel free to do that as well. I'm happy to answer your questions via email. My email address is Mark, M-A-R-C, at FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-C, at FriedmanFinancial.com. And lastly, as many of you know, we put out a free weekly newsletter. It's called Planning Pointers. And many of the stories that I share with you on this radio show become stories in my newsletter the following week. If you'd like to get the links to some of the stories that we talk about, if you'd like to get some financial advice in a language you can understand, or frankly, just some little tidbits of advice that I think might be of value to you, sign up for my newsletter. Go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. At the very bottom of the website, it says sign up for Mark's newsletter. And each and every Friday, beginning at 10:30 in the morning, you will get our newsletter. It's short, it's sweet, it's to the point, and I promise you this, I'm not going to call you. You're going to get a newsletter. That's all. If the time is right that you might want to talk with our firm about really getting serious about your personal financial needs, I'll be there. I'll answer the phone. I'll respond to your emails, but only when you want to. That's how we work. It's on your terms, not on somebody else's. Well, speaking about terms and speaking about better deals, I want to tell you about an experience I've had over the past 3 or 4 weeks. I have been a Verizon Wireless customer for at least 25 years. I think my first phone that I got at Verizon Wireless came in a bag. Had an antenna. You'd keep it over your shoulder. And you know what? Verizon Wireless has served me very, very well. Very well. I've had lots of phones there. I've got my upgrades. I've learned a lot. As I've had kids, we've bought iPhones for the kids. As we've had grown my business, we've bought phones for the business. So at present, I had 12 phone lines through our business account with Verizon Wireless. Our total bill was over $700 every month to get all of the features and benefits that we were paying for. Now, the biggest problem we were running into was my kids. They seemed to think that they had this unlimited usage of gigabyte data. And it started where we would have 10 gigabytes to share, and we found out we needed more like 20 or 25. And that was under a managed thumb. And so I was paying close to $700 to $750 every single month. And it occurred to me that's close to $10,000 a year that I was laying out for a cell phone bill. And I thought to myself, you know what? It's probably worth looking around. And so the first thing I did was I posted information on my Facebook page. And I asked my friends. And I found out that I was paying what appeared to be a reasonable cost in the scheme of things. However, I realized that there were other competitors out there that might like an opportunity to take over a $10,000 account. So I went to AT&T, I went to Sprint, and I went to T-Mobile. And I also went to Verizon Wireless, and I said, look, can you offer me anything better? And they told me that I could buy this group program where you get group benefits and a discount on some of the fees, but they weren't sure how long that was going to last. So I decided to walk into the Sprint store, and I met the manager, Steve, and his business associate, Tom.
And they began to explain to me how much cheaper I could be doing on my phone. But my concern was, I've got great reception. I want my phone to work everywhere. And so he asked me to go to this map. And I looked at the map of where all of the Sprint towers were located. And I noticed that certainly in our area here in Massachusetts, the Verizon receivers are basically on the same tower as the Sprint receivers. AT&T ones weren't. T-Mobile really couldn't give me very good answers. And so I began to ask people around, well, is anybody using Sprint? Have you had any problems with it? And everyone that I talked to said, they said, no, no problems with Sprint. And I thought, oh, man, I can't do this. I'm a Verizon wireless guy through and through. I've been doing this forever. And Sprint is running a promotion right now. They were willing to take my bill and cut it in half and do it for about $325 a month rather than the $700 I was paying. And not only give me 25 gigabytes, but 50. So I could double the gigabytes, get half the cost, and frankly have an app, a Sprint app, that is user-friendly that I could actually tell what the heck was going on. So I did it. But I had to wait for one big question to be answered. Aren't there these termination fees that exist over at Verizon? And did I have termination fees? You bet. But Sprint was willing to offer me a credit equal to or greater than the termination fee I would pay to Verizon on every phone that came over. Now, that credit wouldn't show up for 60 days. Fair enough. But basically, it was a no-cost move, and I saved myself $5,000 almost, because I cut myself down from a $10,000 bill to a $5,000 bill and doubled my gigabyte capacity. More than anything else, my kids love me. They can't seem to use all the gigabytes that we have available now. Folks, I'm telling you, go visit Steve. Go visit Tom. Tell them that you heard about them on Dollars and Cents. And I will tell you this, Steve and Tom, if you're listening, you both know you're not paying for this endorsement. I don't do that. But I will talk about great businesses, great service experiences that I've had on the North Shore in the Merrimack Valley to try to boost somebody else's business. I've done it for CarMax, and I'm happy to do it for Sprint because it's been a great, great experience. All right, that's all for that story. And finally, you know, earlier we talked about these important financial lifetime milestones, and I told you about how my son Jerry, who just turned 16 and a half, got his license, and he's out driving the car for the first time. He has his own car. We got him the car at CarMax. In fact, we talked about that a few weeks ago. So he's out driving his car, and he needs to get gas. So I realized after work that I'd received a text from Jerry, and the text was, Dad, are you supposed to tip the guy who pumps your gas? And I'm thinking, who goes to a place where the guy pumps your gas in the first place? And so my daughters, Mindy and Alana, who both drive, my wife, Laura, they're writing a note to him. No, no, no. And Jerry writes back, too late. I already gave him a dollar. So I find it fascinating, by the way, how we don't prepare our children to handle some of these little situations. Was it inappropriate to tip the guy? I don't know. I've never seen anybody tip the guy that pumps the gas. I mean, I kind of find it funny that we still have to, that people tip at Dunkin' Donuts. Now, my daughter would say, well, Daddy, you tip waitresses, right? Of course you do. And I tip very well with waitresses. But waitresses are earning $2 an hour. The people at Dunkin' Donuts and all of these other places at every sub shop you go to, they're not getting $2 an hour. They're getting minimum wage or better, perhaps $10 an hour. So why should I tip a $10 an hour employee? Because they're doing their job? I should give them extra money for filling up a cup of coffee to do their job? That's not going over and above the call of duty. That's what a tip is supposed to be worth. Look, these people, when you go through the car wash, right? Now when you go through the car wash, you got a slew of people waiting for you to dry off your car. You know what? I don't mind giving a buck or two for that, because I'd have to do it myself. They're doing something that I would have to do myself. That's worthy of a tip. All right, enough on that one. A couple other notes of importance that you need to know. Age 59 and a half. We've talked about this several times. Age 59 and a half is the year, is the age in which you can take money from your IRA and other retirement accounts without having to pay an IRS tax penalty. Now, many people seem to think that they have to wait till 70 and a half to do that. But no, folks, 59 and a half is the time you can do it. I'm not a big proponent of taking it at 59 and a half or taking any money at 59 and a half. I'd love to see you keep working, because you know what? We're working a lot longer than your parents, your grandparents, your great grandparents ever did. When Social Security was created back in 1935, it was expected to provide widows and orphans benefits primarily. But if you happen to live in retirement, maybe provide you some benefits for 5, 6, 7 years, not for 30 or 40. It was never built to do that. Look, Social Security has a lot of things that are broken in the system. And you know what? They could all easily be fixed. Social Security could be very easily fixed, easily be fixed. But you know why it's not? Because there's political undertones that prevent our congressmen, our senators, from doing it. They worry about what the constituents look like. There's too many people in the senior lobby, too many people that vote as senior citizens, too many people that vote that could potentially knock them out of office if they were the senator, if they were the congressperson who decided to change Social Security. Here's just a few changes that I'd propose. Here's one that I'd propose in a second. I don't know if you know this, but there's a cap. There's a cap on when Social Security no longer comes out of your paycheck. If you're making, say, $120,000, $130,000, once you hit that number of income, they stop taking out money for Social Security. They still keep taking out Medicare. They'll still take out Medicare for as long as you work, whatever you make, but they stop taking out Social Security. My feeling is, keep taking it. Keep taking it for the duration. Now, I'm not saying that you should get more money from Social Security because they kept on taking it from you. I say just keep taking it and cap it out where it caps out today. That fixes Social Security. Want to know another way to fix Social Security? We ratchet up the age a little bit, the full retirement age. We ratchet it up to 72, 75, maybe 78 for full retirement age. Not now. Not for people collecting. Not the people are going to collect in the next 20 years. But my daughter, Mindy, should not be expecting to collect Social Security at 66 years old. We're going to be living longer. We've got to be doing things. We have to be working harder. We want to be working harder. We're going to be healthier, and we're going to live a longer life. A lot of things to think about, and I'm just trying to provide you some financial advice in a language you can understand. We're going to wrap things up because we're up against the clock here. I want to remind you again about our free newsletter that comes out each and every Friday. It's called Planning Pointers. All you need to do to get that free newsletter, go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com. Go to the very bottom of the page. Click on the button that says sign up for Mark's newsletter, and boom, it starts to arrive in your newsletter, in your inbox the following Friday at 10:30 in the morning. Haven't missed a 10:30 in the morning delivery since March of 2009. You will get it. Secondly, if you like what you hear on the radio, if you think what I'm talking about is really down to earth, and it's a conversation that you'd like to continue about your personal financial situation, I'd love to talk with you. Come on into the office. It's free. No cost to come in and see us. And I assure you, you will feel no pressure whatsoever. Give my office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. I'm not in the office now, but our machine does work. Leave a message, and I will have my assistant, Jody, get back to you, and we'll have you schedule some time to meet with me. That's right. You meet with me. I don't farm you off to somebody else. I want you to get this right. Retirement is all too important, and you want to be sure that you're getting authentic advice. Advice that places your interest first. And I'm committed to doing it, and I'm going to continue to commit to do it right here on this radio show, right here on Dollars and Cents, each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Thanks for listening. Have a great Sunday, and I'll see you next Sunday. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.